Welcome to the Supported Living Property Podcast with your host, me, Lisa Brown, the place to learn about supported living property investing. In this episode, Victoria Sinclair talks about her passion for delivering high quality property for supported living. She draws on her experience developing supported living property for young people who've been in care and people who have experienced homelessness. She shares some great advice about working with supported living providers and discusses a study she commissioned measuring the social impact of the properties she has developed. Hi, Tor. It's brilliant to have you here today. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Lisa. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Not bad at all. For people who don't know you, do you want to tell people a little bit about you and your background?
Yes, of course. So I'm Tor Sinclair. I set up Bricks and Soul, which is a limited company, a couple of years ago now. But prior to that, I did have another property company called Bricks and Soul Trading. But Bricks and Soul was predominantly set up to supply a little gap in the market that I saw when I was renovating property, and that is to provide very, very good quality housing for vulnerable people across Greater Manchester. So that is what I do. That's it.
And I know you talk, it's one of your big drivers. We were just talking about it a little bit, about your passion for quality in this sector. Talk a little bit more about that and tell us a bit more about that.
Well, I mean, I've been working in property for, say, like, I think it's about 10 years now. And as you go along, you see loads of different houses. And I just kept seeing houses that were so badly done, Lisa. And I mean, it was frightening, and people are living in this type of accommodation. It was well below decent home standards. And I just thought, how can we as a society expect people to get on with their lives and get on a pathway to independent living if they're not given a lovely platform of a nice home to begin that journey on? So I decided that a company needed to be set up, and its sole purpose is to drive the standards of social housing within the supported living arena. And I basically just say, I will not provide a house for rent that I would not live in myself. That's my baseline, basically. That's how I start it. And I'm really keen on doing, podcasts like this to try and just spread the word to other developers to say, please, just when you do your property, don't think of it in numbers. Think of it as a home. Think of it as somewhere somebody is just going to find solace and comfort, and that person can grow and be a better person themselves. And if they start, their development thinking that, then their development, I think, will be a sustainable, successful development.
Absolutely. I mean, anyone who follows me on social media knows this is a pet bugbear of mine, and I bang on about it a little bit. I get property developers approach me and say, oh, it's not quite good enough for private rental, so I thought it would do for supported living.
absolutely drives me insane.
It's just that attitude that because someone's more vulnerable, they don't need such a high standard of property potentially. And I think that's
or if they've if they've been homeless, they're homeless for whatever reason. In fact, I'd argue that they probably need it more. They need comforting and just giving the best chance they can. Mm. So that's really with Bricks and Soul. So As I say, I've been doing it for a couple of years, and providing this good quality housing and seeing the positive impact it has on people. And with that, I decided to have the value of that measured, the social value of it measured. So, because you can sit with people and say, oh, yes, if you provide good quality housing, it definitely will have a good effect. And everyone just like nods their head going, yes. Well, I kind of wanted like facts and figures to it, because I thought, I'm sorry. If you're employing local builders, you're helping the local economy, you're delivering really good quality homes, which are beautifully aesthetically pleasing to the eye, but as well, don't cost any extra money. Let me forget to mention that bit as well. It's just design choices and paint colour choices. And if you are positively engaging with the local community around these houses where supported living people are, clients are, I just wanted to know what the social value of that was and the impact of that. So I employed a company called Hatch Regenerous, who are economic specialists. And they carried out a series of interviews on all of my tenants that have lived in my properties. They, you know, asked me all sorts of questions about my builders and who are employed and where I get my produce from and all of this stuff, my paints, my, you know, everything. And finally, after months, they gave me a report, a fantastic report, which is on my website. And anybody who wants to read it can read it. But the facts are that by collaboration with councils and supported living providers and by employing local people to do the builds, and by delivering really, really high standard accommodation for people, the impact is tremendous. So, you know, I've got something here, you know, for example, this is Pottinger Street, this street I did, and this was for care leavers. The social impact per year of these houses is
£17,900. Pounds? And talking about, that's monetary value.
Yeah, this is monetary value. And then the public cost saving per year is 110 grand.
Compared to those children being in another, those young people being in another setting, is that, wow.
Exactly. So because I'm working with the council, it's £1,000 a week to, you know, basically children in care have, I think, had such a terrible deal because they have been put into care homes whereby, you know, it's and then the council are being charged £1,000 a week by not necessarily charitable, you know, organisations. And actually, that's not sustainable. You know, these children are being put in homes that aren't necessarily fantastic for them. And it's costing the council an absolute fortune. So what I try and do is work with supported living providers that support the councils so that it's a much more affordable ask, you know, affordable way of delivering great accommodation for the children in need, basically.
That's amazing. I love the fact that you've actually got that value to really prove to everybody, you know, that direct impact of it. That's so powerful, isn't it, really, to be able to do that. You talk about, so you're working with some people, some organisations who support care leavers. So that's sort of teenagers and young people leaving the care system, isn't it? And sort of transitioning to take on their own tenancies. You work with those providers. Do you engage with them early to develop the properties to the kind of spec that they need? How do you work, Tours?
Yeah, so what I do is I probably, before I buy a property, I work in the reverse. So what I try and do is find out what, you know, is the need, what's the demand, and work with the provider. Over time, you can do this the more you get to know them, really, and say, okay, well, what do you need? And they'll say, okay, well, we don't want anything that doesn't have en-suites. You know, I've got one provider that just says, no, I need to have, everything needs to be an en-suite, or I need to have a fridge in every room, or, you know. So when I'm planning the build, I will plan it almost bespokely for that supported living provider so that they can offer the best support for their clients, basically. So I work really closely with the supported living provider, and I work really closely with the councils as well to make sure that it's, you know, that it's all sitting well with them as well. Because the way I see it is we're all a team here trying to make the best solution for vulnerable people, basically, trying to deliver that. And also, it's really important as a developer to really know and do your homework on your supported living provider, I think. Because, what I mean is just do your research, find out who they are, how long have they been going, what support do they offer? You know, what do they do for their clients? Some people take the money and, you know, get the contract with the council and sit back like that and, you know, and don't do anything, and it's not their passion. Other people, it's their absolute vocation, and you can spot those a mile off, and I think they're the best people to go with, because your house will be looked after them, because those people are getting the proper support. So it's a sort of, you know, it's a thing that I love to do anyway, because I'm interested in how they make people better and how they get people back onto this independent living pathway. you know, but the more questions you ask about how they do that, the more you'll realize actually that's quite important, because if they are being, you know, looked in every week, or there's somebody coming in, a member of staff every day, you know that each time your house is going to be looked at as well, any problems are going to be dealt with. So, you know, I think it's really important. My advice to developers out there would be to get a really good relationship with your supported living provider, you know, via the gateway. You can easily do that. And, you know, just make sure you're going in, you know who you're dealing with. That's all, because it's not a case of passing a hot potato, because it's not a hot potato anyway, but it's about working together to make sure everybody's happy, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, that doing that research on your provider, understanding them, and like you say, just asking those questions. How do you do that? What does that mean? You know, asking what might seem like a stupid question, you know, but there isn't a stupid question, is there? To really understand how they're working. Because you're right, you can really tell the difference between the providers who are completely passionate about it and really, really get what they're doing. And actually, also from a business perspective, those are the providers who are going to keep getting business from the local authority, aren't they? They're going to be the good ones. So actually your property, they're going to keep needing to need your property too. So as well as it being the right thing to do, so you're not being implicated in poor care and poor support provision, you're also actually looking at the businesses that are probably going to be more sustainable as well and keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
You work with other groups as well, apart from care leavers, don't you? Is that right?
Yeah, so I work a lot with housing providers. Registered providers, housing associations, I meant to say, sorry.
That's all right. They can be the terms are interchangeable, aren't they? Provider and housing.
RPs, the housing association. So I work a lot with them, and they quite large organisations that will get phone calls from councils to say, help, we've got, you know, 80 families a day and presenting as homeless. How are we going to, you know, you need to provide housing. And because they're such like a big tanker, they can't really do that. So they might phone up a little speedboat like myself and go, right, can you just go out, buy those houses, get it done, and, you know, we'll take them off your hands at the end of the day. So
they would be houses for families who have been homeless or at risk of homelessness. So more like a standard family home, or...
Yeah, Lisa, do you know what? They really vary. I've got so much on my books at the moment with housing associations. So some of them are family homes. Some of them are flats, one bed flats. I do a lot of care leaver stuff via the housing associations, mm-hmm. actually, because that's the more affordable way of delivering that type of accommodation. And what else?
So in those situations for the care leavers, your lease would be taken by the RP, by the registered provider, the housing association. Yeah.
Quite often I sell those properties, so I don't keep hold of everything, because mm-hmm. that's the other thing. Well, you know, if you are a new budding property developer that wants to get into supported living, you might not have the money in the bank to keep everything. So you might want to dispose of some of your stock. I always use the motto buy three, keep one, you know, just to try and build your portfolio nice and slowly and steadily. Make sure you're in bed, in inverted commas, with the right supported living provider, so you're not going to get any headaches and everybody's happy.
So who would you sell the properties onto?
Housing associations. Yeah.
And that's they'll buy them from you completed.
Yeah, but I also know exactly, you know, what they want. So in, you know, if people are living, you know, listening to this, sorry, in Kent, for example, there will be a housing association in Kent that's got a housing need and, you know, can't deliver it straight away because, you know, they're just too big. Whereas if you are a little developer and you earn their trust, and it is based on trust, because don't forget, this is public money. So you may use your money, but they're buying it off you. So they can't be buying it for ridiculous amounts of money. And, you know, you have to buy well and you have to be able to make your profit in there as well. But yeah, there'll be a need across the whole country for this. You know, there is, as we all know, a massive housing crisis. And sadly, with the pandemic, it's just going to get really, really, you know, a lot worse. Mm. So I think, you know, for budding property developers out there, just think about your local housing association and how you might be able to help them as well. you know, if you want to get rid of some properties and flip a few.
It's about being a problem solver for people, isn't it? And working out where their problems are and what you can do to help, you know. And as you say, it's relationships, isn't it? It comes down to relationships with people, you know.
It's relationships and trust, you know. It's not being too greedy. It's not thinking, you know, right, I want to make this and this and this. It's actually, you know, if you're in it for the long game and it's economies of scale, then things do build up, you know. It just takes a bit of time. But that's okay, because, you know, I used to work in television, so I have apps, you know, when I started out, I was quite happy to take it quite slow because I was learning, and you must learn your trade. You must hang out with your builder, you know, understand the whole process. Don't think anything's above you, you know. I actually quite like that whole process of a build. I think I studied engineering at university, so I've got a bit of a, the way my brain kind of works. So I quite like it, you know, looking at the fabric of a building and how you put it back together again and why you do this. And so I'm interested in that, but I would really recommend that if you are starting out, that you firmly have a blooming good builder, you know, on your side, who is maybe a little bit more expensive, but worth every penny, because there's less headaches down the road. Yeah. You know,
they're not so easy to find, are they? But when you've got good ones.
A good tip of finding one is, so for example, if you go to a letting agent and it's a letting agent that does lots of HMOs, okay, if you say to that letting agent, oh, you know, can you show me around a few HMOs just to get some ideas of standards and what's going on? And then whilst you're talking to them, they tend to know who the good builders are, who delivers the great, you know, HMO or flat. So that's kind of how I always do it. I do it via agent because they're selling it at the end of the day, either for sale or for let. So they're the really good ones to work out. They tend to know who good builders are.
Yeah.
And that's what I found for mine. So
that's a great tip. I think, yeah, they know that they know what they're seeing every day, don't they, whether they're good or not. From the support providers that you're working with, I guess sort of helping people understand some of the spec and why, how is, are they different? So the properties that you're doing for care leavers, you're talking about them being all en suite, so I'm guessing they're kind of like an HMO, is the look and feel of them. Is there anything different about them, the way that you would do it to a private rental property?
No, not really, because I don't see any difference between private rented and supported living. I think they should be the same. But the only difference is if you're working with a housing association, you have a lot more sort of regulations to go through in terms of they have to have, you know, their fire safety is unbelievable. So you have to have escape windows when it's not necessary for building control to pass. You've got to use specific types of fans. They like their fans that continually run so that, you know, you haven't got condensation within a property. Actually, really good basic lessons, actually. I kind of now use them in my private stuff because it's actually, it's just future-proofing your property. So there's a brand of fan. I mean, I can't believe I'm even talking about fans now, Lisa. It's called New Air and it just continually runs. So it doesn't cost any money. It's just, and very, very quiet. So the tenant doesn't even know it's on, but it's circulating air around the property the whole time, which is brilliant because nine times out of 10, when you go into any rented accommodation, it can be the, you know, they dry their clothes on the radiator and it just causes, you know, damp
somewhere, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's... you're just future-proofing your house.
Yeah. So your spec of your HMOs that you're doing for private rental or you were doing for care leavers would be really very, very similar, apart from maybe slightly higher fire standards than that fan, really.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
And that whole fits with that whole thing that you were saying about, you know, about your quality and being passionate about that standard for everybody and making sure that it is.
Absolutely. Yeah, and when I say quality, it's not like, you know, I'm putting on gold taps. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about paint colours. Carpet, you know, choices. Where you put your plug sockets, thinking about how someone's going to live. Can I get a breakfast bar in this kitchen? Because more people might need to work from home in the future. So, you know, and actually to sit at a breakfast bar, I quite like it. You know, I can't get my children around the dinner table. They're always around the breakfast bar. I think, you know, there's something quite nice about that. So it's just about shopping around, you know, looking at tiles, thinking about what your choices are and how that's going to affect somebody. And that doesn't cost any more money. So paint, it's the same price if it's white or if it's Hague blue, you know, or it might be a few pence more for a Hague blue feature wall. But, you know, we're not talking big bucks here. And for the added value that it gives that person to have that splash of colour, well, it's just fantastic. You know, it just means that they look after it a bit more and they have more pride in their home, you know, and that's all I'm doing.
And it's, you know, I think we'll drop the link to your website in the notes below so people can get hold of that report and have a look at that report that you've done. And, you know, having seen the video that you sent me about, you know, some of your properties, they just look beautiful. You know, they're of a really, really great standard. And I think that's where everyone should be going with this, isn't it? I think so.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, Tours, thank you ever so much for coming along today. It's been great chatting to you. Thank you.